lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring. Ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise
high
as the listening skies. Let it resound loud as the rolling sea.
We're poor, Ashe. We're poor to the creative spirit, the great Ashe out of which we all emerge, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science, Ashe.
Okay.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren, their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who great the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Mande civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shilluk, the Nuer. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who, finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Puerto Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward Coast. We found them in these places, learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God, oh Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand, and who sit here, buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with the Dinka symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions The children of those who could not be killed, we pour our shame.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves, became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, stop, no more. We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths. We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names.
Haywood Carr.
Porter Griffin.
Thomas Davis Jr.
Evelyn Glover.
We pour to the names that we hold collectively. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us, for your children and children's children? Let's say some of those famous names.
Malcolm X, Muhammad,
John Henry Clark, John Dr. Jackson, Muhammad. Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this space and speak your name.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Love is. Some people forget that love is tucking you in and kissing you good night, no matter how young or old you are. Some people don't remember that love is listening and laughing and asking questions, no matter what your age. Few recognize that love is commitment, responsibility. No fun at all unless love is you and me.
Listening to Elders of Sankofa with host the Elders. The Elders of Sankofa radio broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, which operates on the timeforawakening.com radio platform. Reach out to them at Sankofa_think@out.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.timeforawakening.com, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
Good evening, Elders of Sankofa, and to our guests and our community, our village. We have another conversation tonight, and what we're talking about tonight is the power of love. And I'm very highly blessed and favored and honored to be able to be in this conversation and to interview a longtime friend, Zachary Johnson. Zachary Johnson actually grew up in my community in 53206, which is now the most incarcerated zip code in America. And now he is, after growing up, and working in the non-violence movement and violence prevention movement, he's actually involved in creating projects to deal with world peace. So Zachary also is an author of The Pictorial Guide to the Past and Future Shadow History of the United States. He reports that our national data on violence shows that violence in our communities is a public health issue. There's no more urgent menace to the long-term well-being of the Black community above and beyond the pandemic than violence that's currently impacting our community in every aspect of life. We just had two more people get shot last night, and one homicide. Oh, and wow. You know, Zachary, I'm going to give a brief bio sketch of Zachary. Like I said, he grew up in my community. He went to, actually went to Keefe Avenue grade school. And I went to La Follette, two rival grade schools. We played each other in softball and basketball. And it was always that bitter rivalry between Keefe and La Follette. Zachary came out of that community, and now he's a leader in the nonviolence, the Violence Prevention Coalition. Well, actually, he actually was an assistant project coordinator for the Milwaukee Violence Prevention Coalition. And he's now also working with people on the international level dealing with world peace. So Zachary was actually born in Gary, Indiana, on October 30th, 1953. So that makes him exactly 4 years younger than me. And here he is tonight to discuss the healing power of love. The healing power of love. What's going on, Zach?
Thank you very much. I can hear you fine, Brother Charles, and thank you for that introduction. And before I begin, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the elders of Sankofa for the grace and hospitality that has allowed us to come in and share this space in time here with you and the rest of the community. And I would especially like to thank Brother Charles, who has spent his whole life as a peacemaker. I'm honored to be here with you tonight and to share this space with you tonight. So may the Spirit lead us toward a higher form of wisdom.
Yeah, you're one of the most interesting people I know, Zachary. Like when I met you 20 years ago, you were practicing mindfulness then. Like mindfulness now is kind of it's like the new fad that everybody is doing. Although it really does have an impact on a person's well-being. But you were actually doing Vipassana meditation back in the day, 20 years ago. It's like mm-hmm. a marathon. You were doing, practicing marathon meditations. And then I think when I met you, we were actually working in a restorative justice project in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, tell us more about that mindfulness that you were practicing and why was that useful then and useful now?
Well, mindfulness meditation is one of the tools that we describe in our new 21st century toolbox, because we are faced with highly complex challenges that are new and far more complicated than they were back in the day when they first set up the social service intervention model that most agencies work with now. Most programs are designed to work with a single issue, like drug addiction or domestic violence. And unfortunately, we found that many families have multiple issues, where you may have alcohol abuse, child abuse, and domestic violence all going on in the same house. And perhaps one of the most effective ways to do interventions at that level is to help people untangle all the trauma that's been placed inside of them through society and through all the things that we have to go through dealing with our lives here in America. And so I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, that's really so important, because after 400 years of slavery and oppression, we really haven't healed yet. And you've written a book. The name of your book is, let's see here. It's the Pictorial Guide to the Past and Future Shadow History of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And that book, I'm very impressed when anybody's written a book, because that shows that you've actually put a lot of time and thought and commitment in that. And given that this is Black History Month, the pictorial guide to the past and future shadow history of the United States. What is a shadow history? And what is the difference between a shadow history and any other history?
Well, I appreciate you asking me that, Brother Charles, because the book was a labor of love. It took 3 years to write at considerable expense because we had to buy materials that aren't generally available at this point. Now, we chose the title Shadow History because a shadow was one of the most important symbols in the religious belief system of ancient Nile Valley Africa, because it was one of their main symbols for the soul, which they also represented as a garden. Now, how you treated people and how you behaved in life represented the final full measure of the type of fruit a person's life brought forth, according to their system, which is why everything they did was done in the effort to be a good, God-fearing person. And the record showed that our Black ancestors were called the most religious of all men by the so-called father of history, Herodotus, who visited the ancient Egypt. Black African, Nile Valley African. I don't like to use the term Egyptian because Egyptian is a Greek name. That's the name the Greeks gave. So I try to avoid that when I can. But Nile Valley Africans is the accurate term to describe the people who developed the ancient Egyptian civilization.
Wow. You know, you are a man with the best amount of knowledge in so many areas. And this, you know, you talk about the 21st century toolbox. Now, in that toolbox, I would imagine that, is that where the power of love, you have the power of love in that toolbox?
Absolutely. The power of love is perhaps the central tool. That is the quintessential tool. Because if you study classical Black African culture, love was the central organizing principle. Everything was based around the principle of love. You and I have studied the Sand people of South Africa for many years. We enjoy studying those people together. This is a people who never, who the old elders in those communities cannot remember a murder. There was a Harvard professor that went there who did a famous study with the Sands people of South Africa, who were formerly known as Bushmen. They don't like to be called Bushmen. They prefer to be called Sands. And this is a nomadic people who live in South Africa who not only have never had a murder in their community, they've never had a war among themselves. So they were doing what they were doing long before the Egyptians came along.
Wow. Many, now you're talking about ancestral legacy right now, legacy of our ancestors. Now, Sister Dee Dee has a profile, an ancestral legacy profile that she'd like to share at this time. Hmm. Sister Dee Dee?
Yes, I'm here. Let me get back on and I'll find it. And peace and blessings, hello family.
How are you doing tonight, sister?
Oh, I'm doing very well, my brother. Just listening to what you're talking about, as you were talking, I started looking up the South African Sand people, and it kind of reminded me of the Dogon, which they like to be called the cliff dwellers, because they, you know, like dwell on the cliffs and everything, but we won't get into that right now. But anyway, I did want to give a tribute to our Queen, Honorable Sister Cicely Tyson, who went on to be with the ancestors on January 28th, 2021, at the age of 96. Cicely Tyson, the New York-born daughter of Caribbean immigrants, who went on to become an icon and Oscar-nominated actress. She passed away. But anyway, Cicely Tyson, what a great, beautiful, beautiful actress. Tyson was born in Harlem on December 19, 1924, to Caribbean immigrant parents. Tyson also, her parents, both her parents were born in Libya in the West Indies. Her father arrived in New York, in New York City at the age of 21. Then yet, I believe there's a process or something they have to go through or whatever when they come to this country. So, he was at Ellis Island on August 4th, 1919. Tyson contributed to the household by selling shopping bags on the street corner. Her parents divorced early in life, and her mother became her sole caretaker. She had Tyson, Miss Cicely Tyson, had a daughter when she was 17, when she was 17 years old, and got married at the age of 18 to Kenneth Franklin. By 1956, she was divorced, saying her husband abandoned her after less than 18 months of marriage. Kind of goes along with you talking about brother love. I guess the love kind of died out or something. But anyway, and then she didn't get married until the 80s, and I believe that's when she married brother Miles Davis, which was a jazz player, as we all know, and he was a trumpeter, band leader, and a composer. And she kind of said he was a composer because Miles didn't like nobody to be telling him what to do. And I ain't too mad at him on that one. But anyway, he was good at what he did. And they, like, dated back in the 60s for a while. They dated, like, on and off. Then they finally got married in the 80s. You know, good. And what I found so really nice, too, when she married longtime love Miles Davis, in a ceremony conducted by the Atlantic mayor, Andrew Young, at the home of Bill Cosby. Then she filed for divorce in 1988. Miles died, of course, in 1991. She never loved anyone the way she loved Davis, and noted he apologized for all the pain he caused her. On his deathbed, he apologized. And there you go, brother. I guess that's love, too, because at least he did apologize. But anyway, she was also married. I saw also where she was married to Billy D. Williams also at one time. But Sister Tyson, she really had a very, very wonderful life. And was just beautiful at the age of 96. And, of course, as we go online and just look at all her awards and everything, but it was just wonderful for this beautiful, beautiful African queen, you know, to have went on to become this actress. She played in many of movies. And we all know she was in Roots. And not only in Roots, they say even back in the day, she also played in one of my grandma's favorite soap operas, The Dying Light. Some folks listening may remember that, but she was just awesome. Like I said, played in many of movies, and man, it's just so much I could just go on and say about her. She was just wonderful, and she was very private. Although she did have a daughter, you know, she didn't speak much of her daughter. I don't know what happened there. I believe her daughter's name was Joan, but she didn't speak much about her daughter, and a lot of people really didn't pressure her on that either. But may she rest in peace, our queen, our sister, Cicely Tyson. Okay, my brothers, I'm going to turn it back over to you all. Peace. Well, thank you.
I'd like to acknowledge your acknowledgement of that great role model in our community. She always carried herself with such dignity and respect that
didn't
reflected so well on the black community. made you proud every time you saw her.
Oh, my goodness. Every time you saw her on TV, you know, playing in what, you know, whatever part, and she was so versatile, played in some of, I mean, just whatever part she played in. This queen was awesome. And we got to know, too, she caught hell back in the day. Because, I mean, what, born in 1924, and then, you know, went on to become this beautiful model. She was also a model for Ebony and Jet. This woman was awesome. Even when we look at her pictures, and we know she caught it, you know, coming up through them times like that. Because it was her, Ruby Dee, so many, you know, so many of our black actors and actresses, we know they caught it. But anyway, they made it through by the grace of God, and we're so proud. And we need to honor them and tell our children and grandchildren about them. Let them know who they were. Let them know about our black actresses. I hate seeing our black people running around with Marilyn Monroe t-shirts on. I went and bought, my sister was going out of town. I said, hold up, I got a gift for you. I went and found her the most beautiful t-shirt. And guess who was on there? Dorothy Dandridge. How many of our black people know about Dorothy Dandridge? Not many. Yeah. Our young girls don't. You see people got Marilyn Monroe tattooed all on them. No, no, no. If they knew about Dorothy Dandridge, we must tell our children and grandchildren about our story.
Did you see the movie Miss Jane Pittman? That was the wonderful movie that she made. Miss Jane Pittman.
Yep, that and Roots.
Roots is good. Both
Tyson and touched and did was awesome. Turn wasn't it? Man, okay, all right, my brothers. I'm gonna let you all continue because I can go on and on.
Well, we sure enjoyed your insight and your input. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We normally do that right before we start the interview, and I was just so anxious that I jumped the gun. So,
I didn't have my heart to interrupt.
I apologize for that, Sister Judy.
That's quite all right. Because what you were saying, it was sounding better and better. I mean, you know, it was just so interesting until I just started, you know. Of course, I already had my computer up, so I just started looking things up because I love to research and look things up for myself also. And then when we're talking about our African brothers and sisters, I love to look that up. I love studying about our people and passing it on to whomever will listen, the young, the old, 8 to 80, blind, crippled, or crazy, whomever will listen, because we need to know. And it's time to know. And I think if we do know, maybe we will start loving each other again.
Yeah, and that brings us right back to what we were talking about before.
Yes.
We're talking about, you know, what's playing out right now in our communities. And Brother Zachary has a toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
And in that toolbox, he has the power of love. Now, when I think about love myself, I don't think of it as something that you can actually use as a power, like intentionally. But when you hear Zachary talk about the power of love, it's like this is something that we all have access to that has power, and we can intentionally use it to solve many of our problems.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right, Zachary?
That's absolutely right. And as a matter of fact, if you go to the Living Experiment in Nonviolence YouTube page, we have two video presentations on there that give all the background and everything that we've been talking about, everything that we're going to talk about over the course of the night. We've documented it. It's based on solid, hard scholarship, and we can make a case that'll stand up in any court of law for these ideas that we're putting forth, because we're not talking about something that's absolutely new. Our black African ancestors understood these things thousands of years ago. For example, let's just take an example right quick. If fight broke out in among the son's people, they would stop everything in order to resolve the argument, because they understood what scientists understand now as dynamic equilibrium, keeping things in a state of balance. What the Egyptians call, or the Nile Valley Africans call, Ma'at, harmony, balance. And one of the reasons our community is in such a state of chaos is because we've lost contact with those principles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just think if we could go back and recapture those ancient principles. The San Bushmen and the Kalahari, one of the oldest cultures known to man, their religion teaches them, or is such that they can't harbor unresolved conflict. All conflict in their villages must be resolved, and they do it in a circle. And they don't stop until it's completely resolved. And the first thing they do when there's disharmony is they hide those little arrows, those poisonous arrows that they right. use to anesthetize their prey. And then they begin the talking. But before they talk, they actually have a ceremony where they dance and sing until somebody becomes overcome by the good spirit.
Good spirit.
Yeah. And then that's an indication that the ancestors are with them and will inform them on how to resolve that dispute. And that, we talked about that 20 years ago, didn't we, Zachary?
We did. And we need to turn back to that now. We ain't so advanced that we can't learn how to submit ourselves to a higher wisdom than we have been so far. We got to start doing things different. And if it means adapting some of those old practices with a better understanding, now we understand the scientific basis why our ancestors used to do those things. Because all things are connected.
Yeah, we got the restorative circles going on now, you know. And that's one of the things that our council is committing ourselves to do. We're going to begin to provide leadership in that area so we can have peace and healing in our communities by using those circles, those healing circles.
And when you have people in the community who are skilled peacemakers, they act like a circuit breaker in Christmas lights to keep the lights from overheating. Sometimes they'll have a circuit breaker in there. So if you've got people in the community that are skilled peacemakers and skilled at helping people resolve conflict before somebody go and get a pistol to solve the problem, we've got to create the mechanism that can help people have a better option than feeling so helpless that they feel that the only way they're going to get satisfaction is to go get their pistol and use violence against the person they're angry with.
You know, when we reconnected about 2 months ago, we hadn't seen each other for 20 years, but when we reconnected, you were telling me about this nonviolence movement that you were involved in. And usually you don't see too many brothers nowadays with everything going on advocating for nonviolence. And so I would imagine that some people would say we should be arming ourselves as opposed to advocating for nonviolence. And what's your comeback to that?
Well, my response is I understand your anger. I've seen things that I can't even guarantee, as much as I try to be nonviolent, I can't guarantee that I would be nonviolent if, for example, I came up on a police officer spraying a spray in my 9-year-old daughter's face. So I can understand anybody feeling that violence may be the only option. My point is, you cannot show me any situation in history where people have used violence to resolve their political or social maladjustments and come out with a happy, healthy ending. Violence has never worked in the past. Violence only produces more violence.
Well,
we got to come up with.
We do see the success of the civil rights movement, which was a nonviolent movement based on what was going on in India. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of evidence for that. Now, after World War II, which, you know, the whole world was involved in a war, and previous to that was World War I. And then after World War II, I was looking at your website, and you indicating that all of the leaders at that time, the generals, including Eisenhower, what were they saying about war?
America is the only nation in all of history that has won a major international conflict, and then the leaders of that conflict turned around and said, we need to ban war. We need to stop having war. President Eisenhower, he wasn't the president at the time, but he was the leader. He was the supreme leader of the Allied forces in the Second World War. He called for the end of all war. And all his speeches after he became president spoke on those same terms. Omar Bradley, who they named the Bradley tank after, said that wars can be prevented. And we who fail to prevent wars are guilty for those who are killed in war. And finally, Douglas MacArthur said that the entire focus of modern society should be focused on ending the practice of war as a norm.
You know, that makes so much sense. That makes a lot of sense. And we're not doing it. In fact, we're spending the majority of our budget on defense, preparing for war. It's just not logical.
Mm-hmm. Ain't nobody saying nothing about it. In fact, yeah, let me go through it. Between October of 2020 and September of 2021, this year, we're going to spend $934 billion on military spending, even in spite of the fact that nearly one-third of all American households with children suffered through highly dangerous periods of food insecurity over the course of the last year, while one out of seven children spread throughout the public school systems in Milwaukee and Chicago currently fits the legal definition of homeless. Now, if that's not madness, to spend that kind of money when the American people are suffering the way they are, then nothing's insane.
Man, if we just spent a fraction of how many billions of dollars, you said?
930, almost $1 trillion. We can't even imagine a figure like that. Every
if we
year,
could spend,
spending,
just think if we spent a fraction of that to promote world peace. I mean, I think we could accomplish that. If we spend a fraction of that budget. But the interest, I think there must be some financial interest in war. People are benefiting
from
war.
Just like there's financial benefits in the prison system. But
you know, right here in Wisconsin, Ron Johnson, right here in Wisconsin, our Senator Ron Johnson is the chairman of the Defense Committee. And I can now understand why he is so much of a pro-Trumper. And he was advocating today on TV, you know, during the impeachment trials. He almost had a fight with Romney, you know, who's a Republican also, who was going to vote to convict Trump. Mm. And Ron Johnson was in his face. They said they almost went blow to blow, man.
Wow.
Excuse me, my brother. You know,
yeah,
when you were saying who benefits from these wars, look who benefits from them. It's definitely not us. I just wanted to put that in. It's definitely not us.
It's definitely not us.
No, it's not us. And who, I mean, what are the reasons, too, for a lot of these wars? And if so, is that so the higher up? Is that their way, too, of really getting big money? You go over, you're slaughtering and killing people, then you turn around and give them aid to rebuild their countries and stuff after you done went over there and tore them up, killed them, robbed them, or did whatever. And so many of our brothers and sisters done been murdered or been killed. Or if not that, well, they come back home and get killed on the street. All right, my brother. Just had to get that in.
Well, that's so absolutely true. You know, it ties in with everything we're saying. Because most of these wars are waged against nations of color. The Vietnam War was waged against a dark-skinned people. The war in Afghanistan was an Asiatic dark-skinned people.
Isn't it?
So we're losing. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, and another thing my older son just brought to my attention, not only that, look how many other people, too, then become liabilities or they become wars of the state or whatever, because after they come from war, now you got so much mental illness going on. And then you have our husbands, brothers, fathers, sons. So a lot of women are left here without the husbands to help raise the children, or so many children even left without fathers. I mean, that war mess is... it's just what it is. It's a mess.
Well, when they come
the same
home,
people.
We have 22 suicides per day on average of war veterans killing themselves. 22 per day.
That's too many.
That's way too many.
The same people that profit off of war are the same people that profit off the prison system.
You better know it. So, that's right. So true.
It's going to take people like ourselves to speak up and speak out and say enough is enough. No. As a matter of fact, there's a petition online at, let's see if I can, www.change.org, Peace Among Nations. And it's 176 signatures on there. And I'm hoping that the listeners from this audience could put the petition over 200 tonight. Now, if that would happen, then we would, everything we've done to get ready for this show would certainly be worth it. It would make a difference in so many people's lives. You know, the young people that are suffering in our cities, the young people that are homeless, trying to attend school, 1 out of 7 children in Milwaukee attending Milwaukee public schools is legally fits the definition of homeless. That's not acceptable.
Yeah, and, but if you drive up, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was going to say, if you ever get an occasion to drive up to Oshkosh, Wisconsin, that's Ron Johnson's area. He has a plastic manufacturing company there too, but you'll see thousands of military vehicles lined up on their, you know, where they park them, getting ready to ship them wherever they ship them. They're probably shipping them all over the world. Hmm. But when I was amazed that they were making, you know, that many vehicles. It's kind of like, you know, like an auto manufacturing company, you know, like Buick or Chevrolet or, you know, General Motors. They have military vehicles just miles and you're selling those vehicles all over the world. So they're profiting. We're profiting. And that's why he's elected as senator in Wisconsin.
And, you know, it's really crazy. The Army told Congress, look, we got way too many tanks. We don't need no more tanks. You know, we ain't really got no place to put them because you make tanks every year. If you're in a war and your tanks are getting to go up. We haven't been in a war in 20 years. We got tanks all over the place. Please don't send us no more money for tanks. Congress sent them the money, same money they sent last year anyway.
Anyway.
If they hadn't said nothing.
Now, getting back to this power of love, you know, we may not be able to do anything about changing legislation right away to change that military budget, but there's some things we can do in our communities right now, and it's free. It doesn't cost anything for us to use the power of love. So that's what I'm interested in, and how can we heal ourselves? How can we empower ourselves? How can we have a thriving community based on the power of love? That's what I want to hear.
Well, there's a lot of information that's come out in the last 20 years. They've discovered a lot of things about the brain. They've discovered a lot of things about how the brain works and about love itself. That back when Professor Sorokin was alive, that technology didn't exist. We know, for example, that love is contagious. One of the characteristics about love is that it's contagious, just like anger is contagious. So if we learn how to collectively create loving, supportive environments for our young people, we can break the chain of violence in a given community. You start in the home, you work on a block at a time, and then you work throughout a neighborhood. Teaching people through meditation practices and through prayer. That's one of the tools we can certainly use. Intentionality. That science says would make every bit of difference.
Yeah, there's a book I read called Altered Traits, written by Goldman and Davidson. And they're saying that by, you know, they studied the brains of these monks who practiced meditation, and said that the human brain physically alters itself, creates new pathways when you practice mindfulness. Now,
absolutely.
Maybe that's what got our ancestors through slavery, because they were practicing mindfulness. They called it prayer. It was, you know, but the ones who were spiritual were able to, and that's why the church was so valuable during that time period, when they allowed us to have church. That got us through, because prayer and mindfulness are very similar, aren't they?
Two sides of the same coin. One is you doing the speaking, the other one is you doing the listening. Both are skills. Both require concentration, and both activities impact the brain for the better. Every time we think a thought, we create chemicals in the body. When you get angry, you create a form of acid that will eventually eat through your stomach, called an ulcer. But people that are in love, it's almost like they high all the time, because their body is producing endorphins.
Yeah, endorphins, right.
Right. So I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Keep on.
Well, this is the skill. This is the 21st century toolbox that we've got to figure out how to do this so it's widespread and so that it finally does become contagious in the community.
Okay. Thank you, man. We're going to continue this conversation, but right now, Dr. James has a sponsor message.
Okay. Thank you. And our sponsor is E-Doc Advice, E-D-O-C-A-D-D-I-C-E. It's a website created to provide a place to go to get answers to your health or medical concerns. The questions are answered by health professionals and those who are knowledgeable about helping you make decisions about your personal health that make sense to you. www.edocadvice.com. We do not replace your health professional or provide your care, but we can help you to become a better consumer so that you can get the best information to make a truly informed decision. We network with other health professionals throughout the country and bring that information to you.
Thank you so much for that, Dr. James. You know, another thing that that I wanted to follow up on was, you know, this brain, like love actually causes chemical changes in the brain, like your state of mind. Your state of mind can actually affect you physically. Mm-hmm. And there's this, at the University of Wisconsin, Dr., I think his name is Richard Davidson.
Mm-hmm.
You actually know him, don't you?
He tried to work with our prison project, when we were trying to get that going back in the, early 2000s. And he was very committed to it, and he really wanted to see it happen. But, of course, we didn't get the kind of support we had hoped for. But if we were to do anything in the future, I'm sure we could go back to Dr. Davidson and look for him to support what we're trying to do. He was a really good man who tried to use science to do good in the community.
Yeah, I think this is something that's so... like, we're at the brink of a breakthrough, I think, with healing ourselves. And there's another book, My Grandmother's Hands, written by Rezma Menakin. And he's a black psychotherapist, and he talks about trauma in our bodies that gets handed down epigenetically up to 14 mm-hmm. generations. And, I mean, that's evidently scientifically, you know, a scientific fact.
Sure.
So that means that we do have a lot of work to do to heal ourselves. And this subject is so timely right now because this is tomorrow's Valentine's Day, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And, you know, in Valentine's Day, everybody's supposed to be in love.
Well, and the only thing that's going to heal us is love.
Let's get ready for our top of the hour, because we're going to talk some more about that, I know, after we come back from our break.
All right.
Okay.
Sorry. Forgive me. Say, baby.
Time for an Awakening Media lineup. Monday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives, with host Brother Oshi, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Same time, same place. Continued Monday lineup, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds, with host Brother Jihad Ahmed, 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central, host Dr. Mawia Kambom and Sister Nataki Kambom. 9 p.m. till 10 p.m. Conversation Reparations, first and third Mondays. On Tuesday, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers. On Thursday, 7 p.m. till 9 p.m., Melanin Live with host Lance Jones, co-host Boniswa Ayan. Fridays, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m., Time for an Awakening, with creator of Time for an Awakening and host, Brother Elliot, co-hosted by Brother Richard. Saturdays, 4 p.m. till 6 p.m., Black Sister Talk, with host Wanda Chambers. 7 p.m. till 9 p.m., The Elders of Sankofa. And Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Time for an Awakening, host Brother Elliot and co-host Brother Richard. Check us out, get informed, and get in.
You are listening to Elders of Sankofa with host The Elders. The Elders of Sankofa radio broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, which operates on the timeforawakening.com radio platform. Reach out to them at Sankofa_thinksandout.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.timeforawakening.com, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
Mr. D.D.
Well, I certainly will speak for Sister D.D.
Yes, Sister D.D. is here, and my mic turned off.
Okay.
Tracy Chapman's music. Why did you like Tracy Chapman?
Yeah, I like that.
I love Tracy Chapman. And you know, when I heard her one song, A New Beginning, because we need a new beginning. And I was hoping, that you had a chance to listen to that, Dr. James.
I did listen to it, but when we were talking about a 21st century toolbox or toolkit, I had to have this song in my toolkit because that word, forgive me, and I'm sorry. Yes. Goes a long way. I thought about that. Yes. How many times if I had said, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Somebody had said they were sorry. Or
yes.
Forgive me. Or
forgive
they said,
me.
I want to hold you.
Yes, Dr. James. That was a beautiful.
That would have broken the fight out. And I've tried that with children. With
yes.
Misbehaving. Let me hold you.
Yes,
you are so right. You are so right. And when you say that, and Dr. James, when you say that, them little jokers just melt right in your arm, don't they?
Jokers. The big jokers, too.
The big jokers, too.
Yes, Dr. James. And Dr. James, you know what? I'm so glad you said that, because remember when I was talking about Cicely Tyson, what did Miles Davis say on his dying bed?
Yeah.
So, you know, he loved her, but he had issues, so we all do. But, you know, he did love her enough to let her know, because it's never too late. And he showed up and he showed her. It's never too late to say, I'm sorry. And he said, I am sorry. Forgive me. He said, I'm sorry for hurting you. I'm sure that went a long way to her, because she loved Miles Davis. So I'm sure it went a long way.
Speaking of the big jokers, y'all got y'all Valentine's Day cards for tomorrow?
Oh, please. You know what? Don't mention that to me, because you already know my feeling on on the money-grabbing days, baby. I just thank God I'm alive, and if we love somebody, we need to show them we love them every day. Every day.
Every day.
Not just on these man-made holidays. You know, you see how people just go out. Your light bill ain't even paid. But you done went out and bought teddy bears and balloons. Now you got to get your Chippy one. You got to get Joe Blow one. You better pay them bills and stuff up first. I tell you that.
There you go.
Feed them babies. Take care of them babies. Take care of them kids.
Those gift
baskets. Take care of our children. Take care of ourselves.
$50 and $60 for the gift baskets.
And again, and you know what? Again, just like the war, who getting the money off of that? We still renting from Massa, but we got $300 Jordans on. We still renting from Massa, but we go out and get a $60, $70 teddy bear basket. No. We got to start loving each other and helping each other and telling each other on how what to do with our funds and how to stop patronizing all this mess that ain't doing nothing for us. You know what? I don't know how many of you are familiar with Neely Fuller. I love reading his book. Neely Fuller once said, you know what? Before you go and buy anything, think about what is this going to do for you? What can this do for you? Is this going to, you know, what is the importance of you purchasing this item? And we as women kind of really need to think about that, because I've been guilty too. Shopaholic, shop the who back in the day. And then you turn around and look, and you be like, now you got all this stuff. You can't, it don't even interest you no more. Now you got to figure out a way who to give it to, how to give it away. Because I really don't too much like giving stuff to Goodwill. I'd rather just give it to somebody. Because Goodwill going to jack the price up. It'll be high as a giraffe behind by the time they pick through and take what they want. Now they want to sell the rest to the public for arm and a leg.
Brother Johnson, what do you think about this? Is this a conversation that's like trying to direct traffic on the expressway?
Well, no. This is part of life. This is part of life. This is what people is going through these days.
Because people, they want their Valentine's gifts. You know, if you don't show up, somebody's going to be angry, disappointed, or upset.
Because you're programmed. You've been programmed over the years to do this. You're so deeply rooted in program. We are programmed. And a lot of us older ones know better. We are just programmed. Because if I love you, I'm going to try my best to show you every day. I mean, I'm not that naive where I don't know stuff, you know, don't run smoothly or whatever. But I'm going to try to show you every day. I don't need no white man's man-made holiday. Man-made day. To show you. And like Dr. James just said, I can say I'm sorry. I can humble myself and say I'm sorry. Well, I can humble myself and say, please forgive me.
She knew her mother loved her because she fed her. All right, because she knew that food and money was tight. So she didn't have to tell me she loved me. If she fed me, I knew she loved me. And I think when somebody comes in and washes my dishes, ooh boy, that makes me really thrilled.
You ain't doing laundry.
Oh my goodness, I am.
So are you saying that love doesn't exist? The look of love is what makes love show up. It's got to be something symbolizing love. Otherwise, what they say, if a tree falls in the forest, who knows, right? So unless there's something symbolic of love or some conversation of love, in my household growing up, there was never conversation about love. And I have always had difficulty, I used to always have difficulty telling people that I love them because it was just, I wasn't comfortable using that word. And what I hear you saying, Zachary, is that love has power, but if you don't, you know, if it's not in action, it doesn't exist, does it?
Most you men had that difficult anyway, and I don't mean no harm or no disrespect.
Well, that's the way we are raised. We raised to think that being in love is a weakness.
Yep, that's so true.
Well, we're taking calls, and do we have a caller? We're looking for people to express their questions or comments. We see 334-414-334.
Hey. Yes, good evening. How's everybody doing?
Good evening, brother.
I'm doing nice.
Good evening.
All right.
I came in a little late, but I think I still made it on time. I have an exercise I think we all can participate in. And it goes a little something like this. Can all of you all put your phones down but yet still hear me?
Okay.
Can you do that? Can you put your phones down? You can still hear me, but just put your phone down because you're going to need both your hands for this exercise.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Let's get ready. Okay. I'd like for you to take your right hand and put it across up to your left shoulder.
Okay.
Take your left hand and put it underneath that and grab your right rib area.
Okay.
I want you all to do that. So you should be in a position where it appears as though you're holding yourself. I'll explain a little later. Now, I need everybody to close their eyes. Just listen to my voice. And inhale. Exhale. Close your eyes and inhale. Exhale. One more time. Close your eyes. Inhale. Exhale. Now switch positions of your hands. Just switch positions of your hands. So your left hand should be on your right shoulder. Your right hand should be at your left rib cage. And again, closing your eyes, breathe in, inhale, exhale. One more time, inhale, exhale. One more time, inhale, exhale. All right, go ahead on and drop your hands both to the sides. If you're sitting, just drop them to the sides. Or if you're standing, drop to the sides. And then breathe in naturally. Inhale, exhale. Again, your eyes are closed. Inhale, exhale. And one last time, inhale, exhale. Okay, you can open your eyes. Relax, let the light adjust to your eyes, and let me explain. Of all of what has been said, brothers and sisters, I think we all know that the very first love is love of self. And I think that it is so very important that one must be able to do that to themselves first. Let's forgive our own selves for you. Ready, Sister Dee Dee? Spending that too much money for those items that you purchased. Or brother, for knowing that you really did go over the limit, but you know you really needed to show that love. But let's be able to, one, look at our own selves and forgive our own selves. In addition, let's be able to love
our souls, for ourselves. That is achieved, I think. And we're not doing this narcissistically. We're doing this because of love of self. Watch what you see what happens later on after that. I think that light will eventually shine itself from you outwardly, and that love will start to expand. And hopefully this will be a good exercise that we all can practice from even on tomorrow, even if you're up early in the morning or you have that quiet time in the restroom to yourself or right before, or maybe just going outside. I don't know if the sun is out too much where you all are. It's pretty gray down here in Montgomery. But just inhale, exhale. Inhale, exhale. Let's do that for ourselves, and we'll be able to love each other. How about that?
Wow.
Thank you so much.
Asante Sana, Asante Sana, thank you so very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Have the number to reach us, and that's please give us a call at 215-490-9832.
Got it.
Call. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
Anybody else on the line calling in? Sister James?
No, I don't see one right now.
Well, I'd like to follow up with a brief comment right quick based on what the brother just said. What's his name?
Lush. Theodore Lush.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I grew up in the church. My grandparents had me in the church, you know, Sunday school and everything. So the Ten Commandments for me was something that was kind of sacred. And I thought anybody who would speak against the Ten Commandments would be guilty of blasphemy, right?
Uh-huh,
okay,
uh-huh.
So I read the Bible for myself, and I saw written in red, Jesus Christ said, you don't need the Ten Commandments. This is Jesus Christ now.
Uh-huh.
What he said was, all you need is two. And he said that you can hang all the other eight on those two. And he said, first, love God, and then second, love thy neighbor as thyself.
Wow.
Now, if that implies you must love yourself first.
Ashe.
So thank you for demonstrating that.
You're welcome, sir. Thank you for allowing me to express myself. And such a great program, as always, on Saturday evening.
Well, we thank you for that.
Yes, thank you.
And you
really do.
It sounds like to me another tool for the toolkit.
I think so. I think it could be used.
Oh, yeah.
If you can't love yourself, you can't help nobody else.
There you go. And so that one thing, y'all, just real quickly, that one thing that we all have in common with each other is that breath of life. And once we cherish that and value that, I think that you know, there will be some changes, particularly for us as people of African descent. Sometimes the thing we kind of take it for granted, right? But that breath of life is that common thread that runs through each and every one of us, even though we've never met each other physically. You know that? We've never met each other physically. We've heard each other's voices, but we haven't used the other senses, the sight. We also use the hearing as well. And so what would these kinds of conversations be like if we had ever... We've never had COVID at all, right? You know, and be able to be in each other's company, right? And to be able to generate those endorphins that was mentioned earlier. To be able to have that blood now circulate just a little bit better, right? When someone's rubbing your feet or you're rubbing their feet, right? And so it's just, I could go on and on.
Well, you know, even just breathing.
414 554-414-554.
Great. Caller, welcome. Dive in. We're in this love together.
There you go.
And while the caller, is she in or he in?
Okay. She is in.
Great.
I'm
great.
Listening. I had some technical difficulties, so I called on the line to listen. So thank you.
Okay, well, you have anything to say to chime in this loving conversation? Or you just want to listen? Listening is great. Listening is great, too. Because without listening, you wouldn't have anything to speak into.
Back on the chart.
Am I on? Yes. I'm here. I'm enjoying myself.
All right.
I would like to comment on the brother who called in and gave us the brief mindfulness session to follow up on that with breathing. When that amygdala hijacks the prefrontal cortex and people snap because something triggered them and they just went off. One way to reboot the brain is to practice deep breathing. Isn't that so, Zach?
Mm-hmm.
If it was up to me, every police officer would have 4 hours of meditation and deep breathing for every 4 hours they spent on the street. That would stop a lot of this snapping that we see and unnecessary death and injury being caused to citizens because police officers get overpowered by the emotion.
Yep.
Now, if we would incorporate that into the training, a lot of the back and forth that we see going on, that could be avoided. That's unnecessary because we know what to do.
We just have to learn how to reboot that brain because the brain is kind of like a computer when it snaps, when something is said and something is done and, people snap. In order to prevent that snap, when you feel it coming on and you feel like you're angry and your emotions are getting the best of you, to practice mindfulness. And that allows just deep breathing by itself or counting to 10 or, counting to 100 if you need to. It allows the brain to reboot itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And get back in control.
Well, I wonder how many of our listeners have some tools to add to your toolbox, Brother Johnson. I bet there's some folks out there who can call us at 215-490-9832. You have some tools that you have in your toolbox to share with all of us so that we are not violent and that we are loving and we are healing.
Yeah, so if you don't get that Valentine's Day card, you may have to take some deep breaths, right? Count
well,
to 10.
I'd like to hear from
602-403. You have a comment or question for us?
Yes, good evening. Yes, my name is Brother Marcus. I have a comment. Now, the brother talking about peace, love, but I guess that is in the black perspective, right? That is for the black mind. Right, brother? That ain't for white people, because white people haven't demonstrated love. They don't know nothing about love. You see, 465 years we have been here, and they have demonstrated nothing about love. In fact, when I look at history, when I study them, I put them under the microscope and I study them. Their whole history is violent. So I am kind of contemplating, can we really kill ourselves living amongst these people? Can we really heal ourselves living with these psychopaths, living with megalomaniacs, kleptomaniacs, homicidal maniacs, pathological liars?
Mm-hmm.
I would think we'd have to get into a different environment where we have some control over our people, where we can exercise some control and force our people to do the right thing. Because apparently, in this part of the world, black people don't get rewarded for doing the right thing. They don't reward people in America for doing the right thing. You get rewarded for doing the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they put on your head. I say, I got something for you, good boy. You see? So, you know, yes, it's a honorable thing and it's a noble thing, but we have to get into our own environment. And we could use that principle to also all across the world, because we see the same problems occurring in Africa. We see problems occurring now in Nigeria. We see problems in, and it's the same thing. But you notice how the herdsman solved it. They got together, they danced, they sang, they ate before they created that atmosphere. Before. And that is correct. That is true. You see, we could use that principle wherever we are on the planet, you know, especially what I would say mostly in Africa or in our own homogeneous environment. But if you have them in the mix, it ain't going to work because they are full of confusion. See,
mm-hmm.
As soon as you try to get something going, they find some way to jam it up. You know, I study what they did in China. What they did in China, when the Chinese were trying to get their act together, they would go over to the communists and they kill some of the communists and sprinkle some nationalists into each other. Yeah? And then they go over to the nationalists, kill some of them and sprinkle some communist literature and have them fighting. And that's what they do. They have been fermenting confusion with black people. But it's a noble act, and I respect that. But I just think we just need to be in an environment where we have some control and then we can make some progress. Anyway, thank you so much for these programs. They're very enlightening. Thank you.
Thank you for your insight, brother.
No problem.
Now, in that toolbox is the power of love.
The toolbox.
I'm listening. We'll say what now?
I just said we need to put that in the toolbox, what he just said.
Yeah, well, in that toolbox. Go ahead, Brother Zachary.
Well, Dr. King spoke on that because he said there's a difference between light and love. The Bible doesn't ask us to like the white man because it says that love is superior to light. And it's impossible to like hateful white people that's doing everything they can to harm you and your people. But how we respond to them makes all the difference. If we answer hate with hate, then they won. They pull us down to their level. But if we respond with love, love overpowers hate. Every time. Hate has no force, energy in itself. Love is what the universe is made up from. Now, I'm not being naive. I'm not saying that we got to be turning enemy lovers even when we're being mistreated. We have an opportunity. We have the obligation to defend those who depend on us for protection. So in that sense, I understand what he was saying. But at the end of the day, We've only got one way out of this situation. We only got one option.
And so, what's that?
To love thy neighbor as thyself.
Wow. Well, that's what Jesus said, and everybody, you know, who believe in God and practice Christianity would have to agree with that.
Even if your neighbor is evil.
Yeah.
You know, you just call somebody else being bad, that don't mean you have to be bad.
Yeah. And we have to keep, you know, realizing, you know, keep noticing how much power we have. We have a lot of power that we don't recognize. And, you know, even globally, people of color are the majority globally. And, you know, we have the ability to, for example, in education, transform education in our communities if we participated in the electoral process, you know, in the democratic process, but we don't vote. You know, our turnout for like school board elections is like 10%.
Now we vote for president.
Yeah, but you know, if we wanted to control education, for example, the brother was saying that we don't control very much in our environment. But if we wanted to, for example, make a difference in the area of education, if we were more participatory, we could do that. We have the ability to do that. And if we, like in Wisconsin, in the black family, a very small percentage of our children live with their biological parents. And we know that even though we don't get married as much as we used to in the past, we're still having babies at the same rate. So these babies, you know, we see evidence of love, right? We see the evidence of love, but, you know, the family, we don't have the traditional family structures anymore because, and I would think that a lot of, you know, a lot of that's because we don't know how to maintain and sustain relationships. And then, of course, a lot of that is also economics.
All of that. But we, to restore the African diaspora, we will have to restore the African cultural system, which respected them and had expectations and responsibilities. You know, you carried yourself a certain way because you didn't want to disgrace your family. You know, your honor meant as much as being tough in ancient African society. It meant more than being tough. And the last thing you wanted to do was upset your mother because African society was matriarchal society. The mother had basically life and death decisions over the family. The wealth was passed on through the female. So Africa, there were no orphans, there were no prisons, there were no jails. And at some point, we're going to have to restore our own culture. This European culture is for the European. We're not European. To the degree that's possible, we need to rebuild our own institutions. We can start our own schools.
Going back to the example that I used with the family, you know, the non-traditional family situation that we're dealing with right now. And I've read a study that says that when the non-resident parent, usually, you know, the father, is when he is intricately involved in his children's lives, his behavior changes. Based on the power of love for your children? Is that an example of how love can cause transformation in a human being?
I grew up in the church And I've seen men who was wild and drank, and they got saved, and they changed their whole life around. Became responsible parents. Started even participating in PTA. You know, love works both ways. It's like you love others. When you get that love back from your family, that gives you something to strive for. I've seen that happen. So right now it's happening haphazard. We've got to figure out a way to make it happen systematically to the degree that we can.
We need to figure out a way to harness love and mm-hmm. have it transform systems and structures for us.
Absolutely. Heal
systems, structures, and
systems.
Go ahead.
121. We have a caller at 336-6121. You have a comment, a question for Brother Zachary?
Yes. Am I on?
You are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, greetings, brothers and sisters. How's everybody?
Greetings.
Please. Greetings of love. Let me say that. I was just able to hear the last 15 minutes or so of the conversation. I had, anyway, I won't go through why I'm, but my intent was to listen to the whole show because I liked the topic. Dr. Rogers sent it to me, and unfortunately some stuff happened. I was just able to get on, like I said, about 15 minutes ago. But I did want to share that there's a book called Of Water and the Spirit.
Oh, and, yes.
Okay, written by Mala Gomez.
That was almost amazing.
Yes, yes. That book, if we really studied that the way that we study the Bible, we would learn what our culture is. Because this man describes what it's like to grow up in an African culture that has been unpoisoned by Eurocentric Bible teachings, which is so much of it was slave teachings. We were taught slave teachings. That were extracted from the Bible. So Maladoma, one of the things that blew my mind, he wrote that when he was a little boy in his village in Burkina Faso, sometimes the children would disappear for 3 days. The parents would not be worried because they knew that the children would be at somebody else's house being loved and nurtured and taken care of.
Hmm.
And so they didn't go looking for the child. They just waited until, you know, the child got there nurturing and loving and hung out, you know, wherever they were hanging out, and they came on home. Or if they were ready for them to come home, they would, you know, tell them to come on home, find them and tell them to come home. So we have a culture that expressed love. That's a deep love that most of us cannot even relate to. And after slavery, we still carried some of that love where we took care of each other and we understood that we belonged to each other as written in the Bible, but we didn't have to read the Bible to know that, to learn that. Hmm. And we've been so poisoned by this culture that we don't know what love is. Love is an action verb. And it's something that has to be instilled and nurtured and you know, there's some experienced. It has to be experienced. So, you know, reading the Bible, it tells you love is kindness and patience and all this other stuff. You know, that's good, but that's not, you know, that doesn't represent the culture that we actually know is love. So I'll end by saying, you know, we want love. We got to start learning how to love each other again because we're really poisoned by self-hatred because of oppression here. So we've internalized the oppression that we keep experiencing. It never goes away. So we have to learn how to get rid of self-hatred and their ways, their methods, so that we can love ourselves again, and then we can begin to love people that look like us and stop trying to emulate the devils that have been killing us. You cannot love a predator. And I really mean you can't love a predator. They know when a lion is going after that gazelle,
That gazelle could love him all that, love the lion all he wants to. That lion is going after him. He's going to kill him and eat him while he's alive.
Better know.
And that's what's been happening to us. So I really would like to see us get rid of the brainwashing that tells us that we can love these predators, because it's not working. It hasn't worked. So thank you, because I'm saying this in love, but part of love is telling the truth. More black men in prison. More black men are in prison now than I can't remember what our sister wrote in her book. But, you know, they're just locking us up and trying to annihilate us. So we need to get busy loving ourselves. And I don't mind hating them. Peace. That's all I'm going to say.
Thank you so much for calling. And now, what was the name of that book again?
Of Water and the Spirit. It's a fantastic book.
Okay. Now, if you read Of Water and Spirit, you got to read The Healing Wisdom of Africa, too. Did you read that one that Maladoma wrote?
No, I haven't, but I will.
Check out The Healing Wisdom of Africa. When I read it, I ordered 10 copies. And,
wow.
Because I wanted to give those copies away so we could have study groups about that. Because he actually talked about the different cultures, the cultures from, you know, the indigenous culture in the East and the Western world. He compares and contrasts them. And it's very informative.
Well, brother, I'm glad you said that just very quickly, because I don't like to try to dominate a conversation. But he did some of that in Water and Spirit. And that's what helped to open my eyes, because I was a Christian for many years. And when I started learning of our own culture, it's the polar opposite of this one.
Yes.
This one is really poison, but we don't know it. We don't have anything to really compare it to.
Well, Maladoma is rare. You know, he has two PhDs, one from Brandeis University and one from, the University of Michigan. And he's also an African shaman.
That's right. That's right.
He's a witch doctor. You know, he's in touch with the spirit world. And he's brilliant in the Western world, you know, in terms of education and stuff like that, too. His name, when he was born, they, you know, the elders get together and they discern why the child was sent to that village. And so the elders discern his name to be Maladoma, and which means making friends with a stranger. And so he's so well learned in both cultures, and so that was his purpose. You know, that was the purpose why he was born, so that he could actually speak on the indigenous cultures and bring that information to the West, and that's what he's done.
He actually, if you don't mind, yes, I don't want to dominate. Does anybody mind if I comment on that?
Go ahead.
He actually has been dealing with the stranger, which is the European, more so than the black community. So there are some issues with that some of us have that are involved in our own culture. We don't know if that's a good idea. But what he talked about, and I was listening to one of his talks, and how he goes, he has these conventions or whatever, conferences or whatever, with primarily white people. And he teaches them, white men, he talks about how he teaches them how to grieve. Because Europeans...
Yeah, he said, in the West, we don't know how to grieve.
Yes.
You know, he makes a lot of distinctions, and like the mentoring process from the indigenous culture is much different than mentoring that we have in our, you know, in our country.
Yes, and what I see a little bit of is some of the reason that whites are so violent is because they have a culture of repressing their emotions, where we are expressive, we let it out, so we don't walk around with, you know, stuff, you know, well, we as Africans, we don't walk around typically with stuff, you know, sitting on us and eating us up, but because they have a culture, and I'm talking about pre-European contact, they have a culture of suppressing, repressing emotions, and so it's expressed, part of their violence is just that lack of expressing emotion, so it's expressed through violence. I'm mad, I'm going to go kill.
Rezma Menachem deals with that subject. He talks about trauma in our bodies, which has been handed down epigenetically, you know, for up to 14 generations. And he, and in his book, My Grandmother's Hands, after each chapter, he talks about how to metabolize that trauma. And he's used mindfulness practices to metabolize that trauma that, you know, we, before you came on, well, before you started listening, we dealt with that a little earlier, you know, this evening. We talked about mindfulness and meditation.
Yes, and I'm familiar with mindfulness and meditation because other wives have written about that because they know that they're sick. So they're trying to use a lot of these methods. But, yes, you know, the answer is going back to our own culture because they're still crazy. We can't change that.
And we have trauma in our bodies as well that needs to be metabolized.
Absolutely. I would say released. You know, if we were to just grieve all of the murders that have been going on for 400 years nonstop, if we were to just start grieving that, you know, that's a huge form of release, very effective.
You got to read that book, My Grandmother's Hands.
I've heard of it. I'm going to grab that too. But, yes, Marian Williamson, some other, you know, whites that are involved in this, she's written a lot on that. And I've read a lot on that. But I'm a believer in physical release, and melanoma teaches about that also.
Mm. Thank you so much for calling in. That was a great
time. Thank you.
Thank you so much, sister. Thank you. And thank you, too, for the name of that book.
I say. Many blessings.
I say. Peace and blessings.
Well, we're at 215-490-9832. And we are here discussing
the art
of love. And I see there's a, please go ahead. Someone tried to talk. I can't see your number. But you got something to tell us. Please do. There's a caller whose number doesn't come up. But if you have a message for us, please share it with us. Well, perhaps they'll come on in a little bit. Brother Zachary?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay.
I'm enjoying the evening.
We have 10 more minutes to discuss this subject. There's so much that we could say about this subject. It's just so dynamic. And, you know, when you look at love, it's free. I mean, it doesn't cost anything. And it's the most powerful thing in existence. So we could use it. Just think if we start using love like a resource.
There was a Catholic priest toward the end of the 1950s. His name was Teilhard de Chardin. He was a scientist. He was a paleontologist. In fact, the character in The Exorcist was based on his life. This was a real person. He believed that all the things we've been talking about tonight, about the power of love and the role that it's going to play in the end of the human journey. And he felt that this science of love was going to emerge as the most powerful force in science as we start reaching our highest potentials. He called it energetics. Basically the same thing we just were talking about. Learning how to use this power of love the same way we know how to use electricity and nuclear power and coal power and the power of heat from fire, that at some point we're going to get adept enough at learning how to use love energy to regenerate our society, regenerate our family, in our relationships, in our nations, at every level of life. When human beings learn how to do that, he said that'll be the same thing as when we first learned how to use fire.
Wow. Well, you saw the impact that love had on the Senate today when they called a timeout because they didn't want to go past this weekend, right? They wanted to, you know, both the Democrats and the Republicans, they wanted to get this vote, you know, to convict Trump or not convict him. And they wanted to get this done before Valentine's Day, right? Because they wanted to go home for Valentine's Day. So that was their hidden agenda. They didn't say that publicly, of course, but I think that was their hidden agenda.
So what did they decide?
They stipulated to the testimony of one of the senators who had a conversation with Kevin McCarthy, another senator, who actually called Trump and asked him to call off the mob. Trump told him he wasn't going to call off the mob. And so anyway, she was sharing that information with some of the media, and the managers for the impeachment for the Democrats, they wanted to get that information in. So they had her down to to be a witness, and the Republican Party said, you know, the Republican defense said that if they brought her in as a witness, they were going to bring in 300 witnesses.
Wow.
Just throw a cog in the whole process. And if they brought in 300 witnesses, guess what? They would have been there for weeks and maybe even months. And nobody would have been able to go home for Valentine's Day. So they stipulated to her testimony. They said if she would have been called to testify, this is what she would have said. And the Republicans agreed to it, so they stipulated to her testimony, so they didn't have to call her as a witness.
Okay, but they let the information in.
They were threatening to bring in 300 witnesses just to throw a cog in the process and make sure nobody went home for Valentine's Day. So they stipulated.
Wow.
From our sponsor, EDOC Advice. And we provide specific medical answers to those seeking a better understanding about medical conditions and health. We offer our faculty of EDOC, who are licensed physicians and health professionals who make themselves available to those globally seeking a better understanding of health issues and medical practice. We also welcome sponsors. Do you have a service you want others to know about? Have you written a book we need to read? Consider becoming a sponsor. Email the Black Reality Think Tank at Sankofa_think@outlook.com. The Sankofa's email is Sankofa Council, MKE@gmail.com. And contributions to support our broadcasting efforts can be made to Cash App, $ Nirvana, INSTI, as well as PayPal, Sankofa_think@outlook.com.
Is it too late to say something?
Please do.
Hi, this is Zelda Okia. Hi, Dr. James.
Hi, Dr. Okia.
Hi, and I look forward to meeting Mr. Robinson. I'm part of the Center for Leadership of African Women's Wellness, and I love this topic. And I just wanted to say that we are having a town hall about love and marriage in the Black community next Sunday, the 21st. So I would hope that everybody could attend that and just continue this discussion, because I think the more we just repeat this message of love and the power of love and bring back this, just this general sense of community. Somebody mentioned Miles Davis and the jazz and the blues and how, you know, there, it recognized the suffering and how, you know, somebody was hurt, somebody had lost their love, somebody had, you know, been through a terrible time, but the blues just brought it all together, brought it home, and kept the door open to the narrative. And so I think we just have to continue this message and just allow it to permeate, and dig, go down deep into this, the spirits, and really start to affect change in this culture. And I think it's just going to be just the sheer power of the effort and the continuation of this force and allow it to grow and become its own movement. So thank you very much for this topic, and I'm glad that I could be part of this discussion.
Thank you. Why'd you wait so long to call in? We only have one more minute to go. You should have called in much earlier.
I know.
What is this conversation?
Next week, Sunday, February 21st, it's on Eventbrite and on our Facebook page, Center for Leadership of African Women's Wellness, CLAW.
I'll send it
from 4 to 6 p.m.
I will forward that information. I do have that on my email from Hetty Keith, right? She's your
Hetty Keith, yeah.
Your leader, right? Yeah, and I think I saw you on LinkedIn. I saw someone's name, Zelda, and I'm thinking that might possibly be you.
Yes, I did. I followed you. I think I'll have to connect formally.
Okay. Right. You know, El Giroux is from Milwaukee. You guys know that, right?
Yeah, we did. Very proud of him.
But that's just saying it now. We're in this love together. Every time we hear the music, Milwaukee League in high school. We let's share the divine love that we have available. We have divine love available.